Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian. I am here with a loose confederate of gay queers. I have joining us all the way from Hogwarts and all the Wizarding World, it's Adam.
Hi.
Trust me, he gets louder. And then my dear friend and also way back co-host of the Weekly Media Mess, Mr. Eric.
It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
It is, and it was. And I want to find those episodes. I want to do something with them. Because I think there were
make
good
a montage.
Moments. Yeah, basically.
You got to have a montage.
Maybe for our Patreon subscribers. We'll talk about that later. But and finally, of course, we have Aura.
Hi, everybody.
Now, so those of you who don't know, Flame On, of course, is a gay geeky podcast. And this week, this half month, we've decided to talk about Harry Potter.
Yes.
And before we do that, I want to just state for the record, I am a Ravenclaw. We are the best house. And are there any Hufflepuffs here? Are there any Hufflepuffs here?
There's always a Hufflepuff.
There's always one tragic bitch.
No, Hufflepuffs are lovely.
No, they're not.
I love my Hufflepuffs.
Look, I need you to understand how this works in my head.
My Hufflepuffs are amazing.
An owl comes and lands by my window with an envelope. It's happening. It's finally happening. I fly overseas. I buy all my supplies.
You realize
I get my wand. Hear me out. Get on the train. Get off the train. Take the boat across the lake. Go up. Get sorted. Hufflepuff. Grab me my owl and my trunk. I'm leaving.
Hufflepuff's an amazing house. They're particularly good finders, first of
what
all.
What the
they
hell
live
is a Hufflepuff?
Under the kitchen.
What do they find? An they early live, death?
Well, they can find you, food because they're under the kitchen.
Can you name one, and I really can't.
Not Cedric.
Major Ooh. Character.
Tonks.
Tonks. Okay, I know who Tonks is.
Oh, what happened to her? She made it,
hey,
right?
Have you not finished the books?
Don't even be mean.
Okay.
Don't be mean to Tonks. She is fabulous, and her wand is beautiful.
Is
well.
It?
It is. It looks like a pitcher plant. It's really pretty.
Weird.
It's pretty.
How does she wave it?
We've all tried to attempt to hold it, and we can't figure out a great way to hold it. It's
okay.
Very odd.
Now, tell the audience where they could potentially find you at the Wizarding World.
Well, I had the lucky experience to open Diagon Alley, particularly Ollivander's Wand Shop. So I'm one of the lucky few gets to say that I sell wands for a living and not in an inappropriate way.
Because that would never happen in our circle. So I believe you identify with House Slytherin.
I'm a Slytherin, yes.
And Eric, do you have a preference on your house?
I would probably be sorted into Hufflepuff.
Probably.
Yeah.
You seem very Hufflepuffy.
Yeah.
Aw. Well, I believe I house identify with Gryffindor. I may or may not be sorted
that
way.
Riff-raff.
What?
Truth.
I don't know. I'm basically boring and altruistic, so that kind of puts me.
No, no. The motto of Gryffindors is "Let's do dumb, stupid things quickly."
Oh, that's the motto that works of too for me actually. So,
no plan.
Pretty much. And well, when I Puffs over there eating like Cheetos.
Well, when I play an MMO, I basically am Leroy Jenkins or whatever. So that does kind of fit actually really well. So we're here to talk about Harry Potter. We have
envisioning Harry like running in to fight Voldemort. Leroy Jenkins,
no, you're doing it wrong. Hold on, let me. Leroy Jenkins.
Nice. I haven't watched that in forever. And you younger listeners may want to go look that up. Although it's probably a freaking meme by now.
It is.
Oh, the video is classic. Yeah, forever.
It's an old meme. We are talking about Harry Potter today. There's really nothing too amazingly new about Harry Potter. I mean, J.K. Rowling keeps putting out little update stories about, you know, backstories about this character. Ooh. What did Malfoy just get some backstory or
they
whatever?
Talked about the most recent big one that I remember, because I am a bad Potterhead in the sense that I haven't read many of the new stories that she put out, because she put out one like for 12 days leading up to Christmas or something like that.
Yeah, but you have to be a part of Pottermore, and like we all are, but look, I'm tired of pointing and clicking.
Exactly. For Draco, it talked about kind of, it gave almost his side of the story, but it also kind of explained like what happened to him after the entire battle and what he decided to do with his life, and he actually kind of calmed down with his, like, I'm going to tell my father shtick that he had.
But, I mean, he grew apart from his father, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because his father was kind of a dyed-in-the-wool Death Eater. Lucius.
Yeah.
And after that whole battle, I would hope, I mean, you want to hope that the character like that would sort of learn and go, oh, crap, I'm not doing that.
Well, I think after Draco almost got killed, Narcissa was like, fuck this shit, and was done. Because at the end of the movie, for instance, you see that Lucius and Narcissa and Draco all kind of peace out. And that happens in the book, too. They're like, we're not having any more of this, and they just leave.
So we are going to talk a little bit about the books and a little bit about the movies and a little bit about the theme park. But one thing I mean, I've read all the books, I've seen all the movies. I don't know if I'm a Potterhead. I certainly like the universe. I really, really like the books and some of the movies I like. But I was curious about queer theory and sort of because there's not a lot of gay characters or themes overtly in the text. Or the movies. I believe the biggest and most notable thing would be Dumbledore's backstory and revealing his love for Grindelwald. Yep. Is that right? Who is kind of the Voldemort of his day.
Kind of.
I mean, not as evil, maybe, but still pretty nasty.
He wasn't necessarily bad.
He was just power hungry.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Strong willed.
Yeah.
So is he like the dumb?
And like, you know. History is written by the winners.
That's true. That's very true.
You know, it's the Dark Wizard Grindelwald where you find out, well, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. And a lot of people now are kind of analyzing the Dumbledore character and saying that he wasn't really that great of a person that Joe wrote him to be. He was actually kind of a dick.
Well, I mean, you look at what he did to Harry and how he basically didn't tell him anything and let him sort of stumble through his life. It's very much like Doctor Who kind of letting the companion bumble around and figure out something and then need rescuing and then he steps in.
It was only a matter of time.
Oh, listen.
Everything relates back
eventually
to Doctor
we'll
Who.
Get well, it is all British. It is. So.
No, but I mean, so Dumbledore is the only overtly gay character and only in the sense that he had a love for Grindelwald that was never, I guess, fulfilled in any meaningful way or not as meaningful as he would have liked. And then after that sort of passed, he became sort of a asexual monk-like character.
Pretty much.
That led the chillins. The other thing that people pointed out.
When did you become best friends with J.K. Rowling? You call that Joe.
Oh, that's what they say. They are so familiar with Joe. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's whatever. Sure.
She hasn't said anything else. I just call her Joe. It's easier that way than to say J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling.
The other thing I read that sort of dipped into a queer literature kind of read on it is the character of Lupin, Remus Lupin, who is the lycanthrope, a.k.a. werewolf, shapeshifter, whatever, although that's a whole other thing. So the idea being he was not gay, but his battle, his condition of being a werewolf was patterned somewhat after the social stigma of having HIV and AIDS, at least maybe in the last however many years. So they were reading that he was sort of a, you know, a character that Joe, if I can be so informal.
No.
Okay. Was trying to sort of thinly veil as that story to have that in there. And, you know, I don't know that she has said anything to that extent. I don't think so. But this author made an okay case, even citing, like, the character didn't, like, the character marries with Tonks.
Yeah, Remus, yes.
And how Tonks was a metamorph. So even though they had a rough, maybe, love life, maybe Tonks could have been a little gender bending and that made it work. I don't know. This is all this one writer. And it was on pathos, and it was, you know, it was interesting, but probably, I mean, a stretch.
Sounds like slash fic to me.
Well, yeah, a little bit, much.
I mean, I can see how one could parallel the two. I just don't think it's, I don't know. I just can't see that being a good analogy.
I mean, in like, that their struggles were similar to maybe someone having the social stigma, you know, years ago, and I would say.
Well, if you're going to go that route, then I think a better person to look at would be Bill Weasley, because Bill Weasley gets infected during the story while Lupin kind of comes in as being a werewolf. Bill gets hit immediately.
Okay.
From Fenrir Greyback. And then Bill and Fleur get married eventually, and they go and live in the Shell Cottage, very ostracized from everybody else because Bill couldn't take being in public and mm-hmm. being known, because the Weasley family is very well known, being known as a werewolf.
Okay. Well, I think the author also referenced him, and I just forgot about him. And the fact that, what's his name, Fenrir?
Yeah.
How he could have been the part of a person infecting others without worry of consequence, and in fact, trying to maybe ruin other people's lives. Or
well,
something like
he was also doing that because Voldemort wanted werewolves on his side. Like, Fenrir's entire quote-unquote, I guess, brood was a part of Voldemort's final group.
Yeah, that's right. Because I do remember Fenrir vaguely, and I think, unfortunately, in this case, the actor who played him passed away.
Yeah,
not too long ago.
So. Ironically enough, the day that we got his wand at Wizarding World was the day that they found him dead.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Oh, and I meant to mention, we were just recording this on the day after the weekend. What was the weekend called? The festival that was there?
Oh, Celebration of Harry Potter.
Which the actor who played Hagrid was here for the festival and mm-hmm. had to go to the hospital. And I never really followed up on how he was doing. It sounded like it was sort of a really bad virus, but it wasn't like, you know, his heart attack or something, yeah. Stroke or whatever. But, you know, he was supposed to be there and could not, which is also kind of freaky. I mean, I think if anyone had betting money on the next Harry Potter actor to die, it would probably be Maggie Smith. But she's kind of like Betty White.
Don't you dare.
Listen, bite your tongue.
How dare you?
What?
Knock on wood. I'll knock on wood.
I don't want her to die. I'm not saying that.
He put money.
That's asking Betty White to die. How could you do that?
I don't want either to die. They're both national treasures for different nations. But if you were to put money on who would die next...
Why is this even a thing?
This is the alley Dave Maggie Smith. If you're listening to this, we love you.
We love
hope
her.
You don't
I
die.
Love Betty White even more. But no, I was just surprised that Fenrir, the guy who played him, although I don't remember what his circumstances were. Anyway, long story short, there are authors trying to make queer theory metaphors and pick apart that kind of thing. But obviously,
that's
not a whole
Mary.
Lot. Yeah,
it's
that's
like,
what it does.
It's like back in the day when you had overheads, you just put something like rosy pink or lavender on top of something. Just call it queer theory.
The only thing that I know that Joe's like kind of explicitly said, other than Dumbledore, is that I remember at Christmas somebody asked if there was like gay students at Hogwarts, and she responded on Twitter and said like she can envision that they would be like totally accepted there, and they'd have kind of like their own little organization, and there wouldn't be any sort of negativity towards them. That's the only thing. Yeah, and I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm one of those people that unless the author says it, I'm not going to look too deep into it.
Well,
yeah, you can always find what you're looking for. It's like statistics. You can make them, you can manipulate them to say whatever you want them to say.
I don't disagree with that, but it is fun to speculate. Now, the other thing in that quote, she had tweeted back, I think, at someone. She said Jewish characters as well, because yeah. There is not a lot of that. So one of the critiques of Harry Potter is it's awfully white and maybe a little bit of other ethnicities, but very like Britishy white kind of.
Well,
just,
that's Britain for you.
Well, no, I don't think that's the case.
I mean,
you have Cho Chang.
You do.
Don't even get started on Cho. You'll get all sorts of anger about Cho Chang's.
I think we should hear this. Why are you mad at Cho Chang?
I'm not mad. It's everybody else that's mad. Like, apparently there was a lot of uproar when she, released Cho Chang's name. Because apparently, like, Cho is, like, a Japanese name, and then Chang is Chinese. Or something along those lines. They're two different.
Cho is Korean.
Asian ethnicities. And everybody was like, all out of sorts about it, which I can understand why they would be.
But maybe she had a Korean mom and a Chinese father.
And then she was Scottish on top of that.
Oh, that's right. She was Scottish, too. That was weird. But again, there's examples, certainly, of where they did.
Yeah.
I mean,
so I don't agree with the criticism. But
Kingsley becomes a minister of magic. Yeah. So it's not like she... I mean, and I will say he's one of those characters that never really gets developed because he's like the older one in the Order of the Phoenix.
He's kind of a badass, though.
He is.
Yeah, but you can say that about anybody in the Order of the Phoenix that's not a Weasley or
a Potter
or a Granger. Like, it's just, you know, that's just the way it is. We weren't really focusing on them.
Yeah.
So what if we address that pretty well, what draws you to the world of Harry Potter? What is it about all of these rich creations and this rich world that Joe has built that attracts you guys to this?
Well, for me, I grew up with it. So, I mean, I remember I got the first book when I was in sixth grade out of like the Scholastic.
Girl, were you doing Book It?
It's something like that. Like, where they have the book fairs come to you, or order the books and they send it to you.
Yep,
I remember the first one was in there, and I got it. And I, like, breezed through it and absolutely loved it. And then my mom started looking on for more. And then that's when the series started really getting the rise that it did. And so I remember I got the last book between my junior and senior year of high school and cried all summer because of just how ridiculous, like, intense it was. And that's what drew it to me. And especially, I think I found that a lot of, like, the awkward teenagers and a lot of, like, gay kids and a lot of just the not jocks, not cheerleader people in high school really were drawn to this series because it gave them an escape that this could be something real and this could be something cool that they can just immerse themselves in and forget about the trials of high school.
So like an escapist thing, but yet something you could identify with.
Yeah.
It's the same reason some people really fall in with like the X-Men or other comic book characters that they can immerse themselves in and also have those themes of a secret life. I mean, when you're a muggle, like everybody else is a muggle, whatever, but if you're a wizard, you know, that sets you apart and makes you special.
Mm-hmm.
Oral, what do you think? Well, how did you
in high school, I got put in the gifted program, and so our curriculum was kind of like really out there and like almost not whatever we wanted, but like it was cool because you sit in class, you read newspapers, you know, you talk about something, you watch The West Wing, you pull it apart, and one of the books that we had to read was Harry Potter, and me being the overachiever that I was, I was like, well, the movie's coming out, so I'll watch the movie, I'll read the book, you know, I'll be down for when I have to do this, like, analysis on it, and just instantly fell in love with it, and for that year for Christmas, I asked for all the books that were out, which, this is dating me, and so the last one to come out was Goblet of Fire, so I got all four at once, the first four at once.
Oh, okay, sure.
And it became an escape for me. Like, it's one of those things where I got it at the right time in high school and just kind of, like, cemented itself in the foundations of my, like, adolescence. So even though I think I came to it pretty late in life, it had, like a lasting impact. So I would see the movies at midnight. I'd be there for the book releases. Funnily enough, anytime they're like, oh, well, welcome, you know, you pre-ordered this book. Here's your little sticker that tells you, you know, what line you're supposed to be in and when we call you. And it was always Ravenclaw. Always.
Oh, they did that? Okay.
That's cute.
Mm-hmm. So I see Eric looking over at me very sadly because I believe he and I think we were actually living together at that point when some of the books were out.
Yeah, but I mean, I discovered it before I had moved in.
Oh, was it before?
Okay. Yeah. I was staying at a friend's house for a couple of weeks because we had a summer job at this warehouse or whatever. But her little sister had the first four books. And okay. So I had never heard of the series before.
So you knocked the little girl out and stole her books?
Wow. Rude.
No, I just read them while I was there. So in 2 weeks, I read the first four books.
Yeah, they read. I mean, I'm sure most of the people who are still listening to this have at least read one or two of the books, mm-hmm. or maybe just the movies. They read really quick. I remember.
Oh, but I mean, it's also very easy just to get lost in that world.
No, and that's what I meant. I don't mean they're... I mean, they are children's literature, but don't think that they're dumbed down. They're not.
No.
But they do. They're very compelling. You go from chapter to chapter. The chapters are a little shorter, I think, and that helps propel you because you're like, well, I can read another chapter.
I remember that the quickest I got through the first, like, 6 hours.
And did you do it in one...
Yeah, in one sitting.
Well, also, if you think about just the size of the books, the first three books are so much smaller.
Oh, God, they ballooned.
171, 2 and change, and then 3 plus.
Yeah.
I think that's 1, 2, and 3. I read those first four books cover to cover multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't gone back and reread the last couple.
Yeah, because I don't want to ball my face off. That's true. What I want to watch or read them.
Because, I mean, personally... I enjoyed 4 through 7 much more than the first three.
I think she evolved through the storytelling and through learning and developing the world. Like, she did get better. And I think the world itself got a lot richer as you just added more and more stuff to it. But, you know, I got the books, I believe, around the same time you did, because I hadn't read any of them when they came out. And then Goblet of Fire came out. Everyone was going crazy. I'd hear about Harry Potter, this. So I was like, all right, I love reading. I love, you know, I hadn't read a lot of child lit, but I had read, like, the Golden Compass books, and I had read like Lemony Snicket, and I was like, all right, well, I'll try this. And, you know, it just absolutely kind of encaptured me and gave me another sort of an escapist kind of thing. And, you know, I've never been big on fantasy or magic. It's like, it's okay, but
lies.
No, I really,
lies and deceit.
I really hadn't at that point.
You
I was,
built your whole empire
literally
on fantasy and science fiction.
No, no, no. Well, outside of the comic book world. And I wasn't actually, I didn't think, I was just getting into comics, I think, at this point, or back into comics. But no, the way the books bring magic and the real world together, to me, was more compelling than a book about a wizard off in fairyland and doing this and that. I really felt that that was, I think, one of the hooks for me. Is I could, and I didn't, but I could pretend that this was the real world, and there was just this...
What do you mean, pretend?
I know, I do the... Like,
I still keep tapping walls.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, if you ever go to the Diagon Alley...
You mean the place that I cried? I cried a lot when I walked into Diagon.
Yeah, this is an emotional series.
Yeah. Like, okay, so let's jump a little. So,
okay.
I didn't go to Hogsmeade probably for a year after it opened.
Well,
which
you couldn't. The lines were ridiculous.
And I'm just like, you know what? I'll go when I want to. I can get in anytime I want to. It'll be fine. I'll just wait. And my friends are like, hey, like, you know, let's like hang out tonight and then I'll take you tomorrow. I'm like, that's great. I got so emotional just to see all of those touchstones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like it's different when you see a movie and you love that movie.
But to see something tangible.
Yeah. And seeing the snitches in the windows and the mandrakes and like the little nuanced things that you as a huge fan like always kind of wish to see, and having that there just pushed me over the top. Thought I was going to be okay during Diagon. Walked in, bawled my eyes out. Bawled my eyes out.
It's so real.
Well, so it's because, like, as you know, for me being like that awkward gay teen, like I escaped into these books. And so when you turn a corner and you see, hold on, shut up. Don't look at me. When you turn the corner and you see the Hogwarts Express just like bright red, mm-hmm. and the steam billowing and you see like all of these people who you have this like shared experience with, even though you don't know who these people are, you know that like this is so like palpable for them, as just as it is for you. Mm. Like, cried on the train, off the train, got back on the train, cried on the train, got off the train, cried during Gringotts like you wouldn't believe. Like, it was
really,
yeah, like it's, and you know what, like I am not one of those people who says that Harry Potter is for everyone, because it's not.
It's not.
Even my friend who, you know, like loves movies, stuff like that, when during, I think it was Deathly Hallows. Was it Deathly Hallows where they have the wizard battle in the coffee shop?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Deathly Hallows Part 1. Like, I'm engrossed in this because this is really like, really in like
it's just intense.
Visceral. Yeah. And he leans over to me and he's like, you know, at the end of the movie, he's like, I know that was like that battle was supposed to be intense, but for me it was just people waving sticks around, just like, because it's just not his yeah. world.
No, I understand.
But
that.
I just, oh god, look
at the Diagon Alley specifically, because that's the newer one. I haven't been to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard a single negative thing about it.
Oh, it's
other than the lines can be crazy. I think when it opened here,
8 hours.
Yeah, it was like you would basically be there for most of a working day to wait in line. But I mean, it's a transformative experience. Like, you don't.
The coolest thing about Diagon, I thought, because I mean, if you go to Hogsmeade, like, you basically walk from Lost Continent / Jurassic Park, and it's kind of just there. It's mm-hmm. still a part of Islands of Adventure. When you go into Diagon and you walk through those doors, you are in Diagon Alley. You yeah. don't see any other part of the park.
Nope.
You see nothing else. You just are engrossed. And it really takes theme park, I feel, to a whole nother level, because I can't think of another park where you can stop in a location and not see any other part of the park except for Diagon Alley.
That's, I mean, I can only imagine like the realism of that. And I'm kind of surprised other parks, and certainly they're probably learning from this a lot, but they've pulled that. I mean, it, you want to be able to escape into that world. Now, I did want to ask about the actors, because you said there were people in robes who were walking around and greeting you. Was that kind of what I picked up?
I mean,
out of that?
During opening, we had actors that would be walk around and do that. Like, okay. When we had all of the talent here, we had all the actors, like the actors. We had people dressed as witches and wizards walking around Diagon Alley to make it seem as though it was an actual alley.
Okay. Now, but I mean, even people who just come to the park at a time of the year where it's not sweltering.
I mean, there'll still be people there to facilitate.
And wearing their own, like, you can get robes there. And
whenever I first went to Hogsmeade, I wore everything. Because my best friend, she made all of our robes hand-stitched.
Oh, wow.
From scratch. I mean, of course, it's like 10 pounds worth of cotton. But she made all of that. And we had our own outfits. And we went in August in Florida in that outfit. I've done it a few times, but I have not done it since for a past few years now. But I mean, August wool sweater,
cannot imagine,
with the 10 pound robes in dress slacks. Like, I was that kind of fan.
No, and you know what? It's so tempting to buy. You know what? Everyone wants a cloak just so you have a cloak, so you could be that person who always has a costume ready.
Yeah.
But, like, even the sweaters, like, these are amazing, like, pieces. Like, everything is really, like, a tangible quality. Like, nothing looks cheap. Even the cheap things, like,
don't
have a high, yeah, don't look cheap. But I want a sweater. It just, I would wear it for 2 weeks in Florida and then sweat to death.
Yeah, it's like the thing I want most is just one of the big scarves, but I'm never going to use it.
I totally relate. That's my fourth Doctor scarf. I don't ever get to wear it, but I love it. Mm-hmm. I did have, and this was sort of related to my previous stories about MAL, as featured on the last episode. While I was there, I text Adam, and I'm like, I have this vision of a Slytherin leather outfit, and this does not make sense to me at all, other than just a raw like visual, but like a leather scarf.
He wants me to do this,
and I feel like, you know, it would
be. So you're the third. Nice to meet you.
Oh, no,
hi, how are
it
you?
Is It is very much in his, you know, wheelhouse. Yes, I was trying not to use that word, but yes. And have you seen anyone pull off Harry Potter leather realness? Have you seen
not
this?
Leather, but I've seen a Pandora box in a Griff.
Yes,
corset.
That's I true. Love that.
That is very true. Did not think about that actually. I think when she was here last time at
she came out in the full Hermione Granger. Just the robes, and then pulled them off, and she was in a Gryffindor corset, and it was amazing.
It was amazing.
wrong queen.
What? I know. Totally, it's the wrong queen, but I still have to think about it. So, who are our favorite characters then? So we kind of laid a little bit of foundation. We talked about the Wizarding World. I will start. I really like Snape. Is that weird? It's weird. Snape as a character, I felt had the most transformation, and it based was, you know, she probably knew ahead of time, okay, this guy's not that bad, spoilers, but we're going to portray him as like the dick and the villain and all this. And then you learn his backstory and you kind of go, oh, okay. He was the guy who people kind of picked on.
I have this rant that I'm just waiting.
Okay, good.
You
good, good. But the end, he does what is needed. He does not do what is maybe noble, but he does what is needed for the characters, and has, I think, ultimately everyone's best intentions. Like he really is a hero.
He's not the hero that Hogwarts wants. He's the hero that Hogwarts needs.
Thank you. That's perfect. So why is that wrong? Or what's the negative?
I hate when people say, oh my God, Snape. Always. This is why it pisses me off.
Okay.
Because he really was a douchebag. He was an asshole to Harry. He gave no fucks about... Can I curse on this?
Yeah, no. Okay. We're very
he gave here. No fucks about Harry. He only cared about Lily. He didn't care about anybody else. He did not care about Harry's well-being. He could have cared less about anything. He only did it for Lily. If Harry had been born to Neville's parents, Snape wouldn't have given two shits about him and would have treated him just like he still does. Mm-hmm. He was a bully, and I do not like Snape. I have never liked Snape.
Now, I think and I'm not saying that's wrong, because obviously you know this, you know that's true. But I mean, is it possible that he, kind of like Dumbledore, really felt that he needed to be that way for Harry not to...
because
he saw Harry as a little James.
He did.
And he did not want Harry to become James, and probably took out some of his aggressions on him. I think he, in his defense, if I can play devil's advocate, it might have been so he didn't become like James and be kind of douchey. Because James was douchey, let's be honest.
He was.
So, you know, I see a legitimate... desire to not have another James Potter running around, and given that he obviously was in on everything from...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Fairly early on, he knew the kid had to be sort of protected and did things without giving it away. You know
but
what I mean?
He didn't care about Harry. That's the thing. Even in the last moments, he only showed Harry all of those memories kind of to be like, I did it for your mom. I don't really care about you, because he saw Harry as being James's trophy. Of being James's trophy that he had Lily, and that Snape could never have Lily, but James did, and this was the product of that. And it was almost like a feel bad for me, bittersweet, like, I didn't do any of this because of you. I did it because I felt like I owed Lily something, and because I loved her.
Well, that's, but, okay, so let's go with, you know, that argument. Even if he did it for Lily, that's still noble, I think. That still shows the virtue.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, I don't, you know, think he's heroic, but clearly in most of the books, he's the villain. Other than the, you know, Voldemort doing whatever behind the scenes, and then the other villains of the book.
I wouldn't call him a villain. I'd call him...
an antagonist.
He's an antagonist, okay. But he's not a villain.
I'll give you that. Well, anyway, so he's not my favorite, but I think I have to stick up for him for that reason, that I felt like he was sort of the unsung hero. Oral, who's your favorite?
Through and through, it'll always be Hermione. Because I've always been the Hermione of the group. Brave when you need to be, but, you know, you use your words and you figure out solutions. Not everything is a run in and stab a snake sort of thing.
Well, sure.
And, you know, everyone always, and they push it in Azkaban a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's the brightest witch of her age. Like, you know, she has all this potential that the boys don't necessarily see. Unless she does something, like, spectacular for them. But, you know, that bitch was taking, like, all the courses and still managed to help solve the problem.
Well, but she was using a time travel device for that.
She still had to do that.
Yes.
I know.
But, like, you know, Hermione...
If it wasn't for her, Harry wouldn't have gotten half the shit done he did.
That is clear, I think.
He was incompetent.
Yeah, he bumbled his way through. Yeah.
They both were. When you look at it... Like, Harry is the everyman coming into this new world. Ron is someone who has grown up in this world and still bumbles through it. But Hermione is someone who this is all new to, but she still, you know, has more sense than both of them. Yeah, she adapted. And she got them through Deathly Hallows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was her.
Yeah.
Like, yes, Harry sacrifices
through
himself.
All the camping.
It was Harry Potter and the Great Camping Trip.
Yeah.
That's essentially what Deathly Hallows
was. That was the joke
is.
At the time we were reading it. Was like, oh, no, he's still camping. Where are you at the book? He's camping. Oh, how many times has he already been camping? Oh, you know, 5 or 6. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous, but yeah. I digress.
But I love how clever she is. I love how smart and determined she is. And, you know, she's not the strongest, but she's, I think, has the strongest will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I admire about her.
And to add to that and interject a little bit, if I may,
of
one of the things that gets to me the most, like working at the wand shop, is that we'll have parents who come in with their kids, and the kids, boys specifically, will be looking at the wands, and they'll go for Hermione's. And then, because it's a pretty wand.
It's very pretty. Yeah.
It's for those who haven't seen it, it's kind of like a tan with like... ivy going around it. It's very pretty. So a boy will pick it up, and the parents will ask who it is, and it'll be Hermione's. And like, oh, that's a girl's wand. Put it down.
Oh.
And it pisses me the fuck off, because if I had a boy, I would love for them to be like Hermione. Mm-hmm. I'd love for them to be intelligent. She fucking punched Draco in the face, of all things. She is the only one who got physical. She's a badass. Why would you not want your boys to be like Hermione?
Yeah. I agree completely.
And like in the books, like, you know, you could say, like, even though she's not, she's very white in this world. She's the black girl. She's the smart black girl who has to work twice as hard.
The strong, independent black woman who don't need no man.
Exactly. Because, you know, she comes from, you know, a world that not many people find her equal in. And it's not because she's a woman. You know, like, sexism kind of exists in the wizarding world, but it's not really prevalent. It's like, how pure is your blood?
Yeah.
Which is why I totally can relate to people being Slytherin. I got sorted into Slytherin during Pottermore. I was a little tipsy.
Do not even bring up Pottermore.
I gasped. I backed myself away from the computer. I'm still mortified to this day. But like,
green is a good color on you, though.
But I don't dislike Slytherins. Slytherins aren't bad people per se. They're just really ambitious.
Slytherin and Ravenclaw are also two, like,
We're two sides very of the same, similar. Yeah, we're two sides of the same coin. The thing is that what I don't get are like people who consider themselves Death Eaters because you're fascist. I don't think you understand that. You're fascist.
Maybe they like Hitler and Mussolini. Maybe
I mean, it, like it's and it really irks me when I see people with dark mark tattoos. I'm like, but they oppressed.
It's like getting a swastika.
Exactly. Like in the wizarding world, a death like a dark mark is a swastika. Like yeah, and it's just like I know if I was a wizard, I wouldn't be the whitest of magic's wizard. Like I'd be pretty dark from time to time. But I wouldn't at any point think, you know what?
I want to join the Nazis.
Yeah, like it's just can't do it. I'm sorry, we took up a lot of time.
No.
Your favorite character?
No, that's okay. And again, nothing's wrong with Slytherin as a house. I mean, originally Harry was going to be sorted into Slytherin until he told the Sorting Hat no.
No, thank you. No, ma'am.
And it was, if not Slytherin, Gryffindor. And,
of course. So what would be your favorite? Or who is your favorite?
Just to kind of draw a parallel with my own high school career, because that's what all these kids are going through, is basically high school. It would be somewhere in between Hermione and Neville.
Oh, Neville.
Because, Neville. Yes, I was the smart one, but I was also the goofy, kind of dorky...
Band nerd.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Oh, he is a band nerd, yeah. Isn't he?
Oh,
Neville is such
Neville is a motherfucking hot band nerd.
True.
Having seen
his... No, starts off awkward freshman year, and right. Then senior year is super hot.
Very. And he's like not even the guy I would normally find attractive, but the pictures I have seen, and ostensibly maybe the video that has been... You know, is
he's
out
so
there.
Skinny in person.
Yeah.
It bothered me.
No.
Yeah. I was like,
You just want to give him a sandwich? I understand.
But yeah, and also Hermione, it's just, again, there's kind of that escape where she came from ordinary parents, but still qualified or got to be in this magical world. And that's just kind of, you're able to relate more to that.
It's the transformation. Oh my God, there's something special about you all along. Da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's why Harry is a good escapist character, because it's the same thing. He's living a muggle life. Not realizing where he's actually come from, and then he discovers all that. It is interesting that none of us have said Harry Potter, which is sort of the obvious on-the-nose choice, but, I mean, do we like Harry overall as a hero? Do we think he was an effective protagonist?
I mean, do you like King Arthur? Like, he's nothing without, like, Lancelot and Guinevere, so, like, he's not a bad character by any means. Yeah. Like, we all have a love for Harry. It's just, you know, is he my favorite? No. I also have a thing for redheads. Mm. So all of the Weasleys are just like the end all be all, except for Percy. Like Percy's just never
so awkward and uncomfortable.
You know, yeah. Oh. Like, and you know that it's not even one of those scenarios where he's really repressed in public, but just, hey, you have really awesome sex with him. He sits there like a log and you're just mad about it.
Oh, Percy. Did we? I don't forget. Did you say who your favorite is?
I have not.
Well, who is your favorite?
Okay, so mine is going to be a bit obscure, but my favorite is Horace Slughorn.
Wow. Yeah, I vaguely
that's
recall,
not obscure.
I vaguely recall who he is, but refresh our memory
here. Okay, so Horace is he doesn't come into play until Half Blood Prince, which is book six. He. Eventually, I guess Hogwarts was like, we can't find anybody else who wants to be Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. So they make Snape Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and they go back and get Slughorn. Slughorn used to be the potions master before Snape. And so they bring Slughorn, and well, actually Dumbledore kind of recruits Harry to go basically kind of kidnap Slughorn and bring him to Hogwarts. Because when they get to his house, Slughorn is a couch.
Okay.
And
oh,
so
it's all coming back.
And so they eventually force him out of his couch state and convince him to come to Hogwarts. So he comes to Hogwarts. And Horace is one of the things he's most well known for is he is who taught, or not taught, but told Tom Riddle, aka Voldemort, how to make Horcruxes. He's also founded the Slug Club, which was kind of like.
Yeah.
I guess if you had National Honor Society or like Beta Club in college or in high school, he kind of did that.
It was the IT Club.
It was.
Everyone who was in the who's who of exactly. high school yeah, students. That's,
and he wanted to have them around was. Him so he could elevate his own
skills. Well, he was very into hero perks. Worship.
But the reason I love Slughorn was is because I also started in college myself the Harry Potter and the Muggle Outreach Conference, which was a academic-based Harry Potter conference that we hosted every year. And one of and we would have students come in and teach actual like academic topics on Harry Potter. And I did one year of not all Slytherins are bad, because I get sick of hearing that Slytherins are terrible people. I got sick of it. So I finally was like, okay, I'm going to point out to you some really actually awesome Slytherins and show that they're not all terrible people. And one of the ones was Slughorn, because he's one of the main, I guess, not bad Slytherins. And actually doing a lot of research on Slughorn and reading back, he to me represents all of the best qualities of Slytherin.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, you know, he's the reason that there were Slytherin students at the Battle of Hogwarts, and he's the reason they were there, is because he goes and he gets them and brings them to fight all the Death Eaters. And Jo has said this herself, that it was because of him that he goes back to Hogsmeade, gets the Slytherin students, and has them come to fight in the final battle.
Okay. See, I had forgotten that, and certainly I don't remember in the movie that being prominently, you know.
It
done,
doesn't, so. Because in the movie, McGonagall so basically sends all the Slytherin and Ravenclaw students home, or to the dungeons, and it's just the Hufflepuffs and the Ooh, Gryffindors.
I didn't remember that either, but that's pretty fierce. I mean, that's pretty bitchy, I should say. I think you've made a very good case for him. I had not even considered him. Are there other Slytherin, though, that are kind of in that same vein where they struggle maybe because they're tempted by the power of the Death Eaters and wanting to be in the side that wins, but they're also sort of...
Well, you have to look at it this way. The book is written from Harry's perspective. And Harry, from the get-go, already had a bad relationship with both Draco, Crabbe, and Goyle.
Right.
So he's going to look at Slytherin House and not really see great people.
And the only time you actually see other Slytherins are the people who are friends with Draco.
Yeah.
So like
Penelope Clearwater and Pansy Parkinson, that fucking I hate her so much. Hate Pansy.
Something I never thought I'd hear you
I
say.
I totally forgot I got sent to the dungeons with you. That's some old bullshit.
So that's an opportunity, I think, maybe, because I know Joe is writing the prequel books now that are going to deal
with... Well, Joe herself is also a Gryffindor, so it's going to be written from a Gryffindor's bias.
Wait, Joe is Gryffindor?
She's a Gryffindor.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm. I didn't know if... But I would want to see maybe one of her stories written from the Slytherin perspective. Maybe even do like a... the Slytherin side of the events of Harry Potter, not that she...
Well, an interesting character that she never really... That was one of the characters she was going to have. Her name was, I believe, Mauve. And she was going to be a very distant relative of the Weasleys, actually. And she was going to be sorted into Slytherin House. Eventually, she was basically going to serve the purpose that Moaning Myrtle served in Chamber of Secrets. But she eventually just kind of cut the character and made Moaning Myrtle instead. But she was going to be a kind of major character, but was going to be in Slytherin House.
Interesting.
Yes, but obviously got cut and Moaning Myrtle was put in instead.
I will say, and this is sort of another tangent, the ghosts and how they're introduced in the beginning of the first few books, they get a little bit to come back here and there, but I did feel like, especially in the movies, they sort of were just like gags.
Well, Peeves wasn't even in there.
Not really, when you think about it, they're not really important.
They're not.
But the idea, it could have played a bigger role if she had chosen otherwise, because they did have transformative,
that's what the,
you know,
that's what the veil and the dais and the resurrection stone are for. Like, you know, those to me are more palpable expressions of the afterlife, and you know that not everyone gets to cross over, and when you do, it may not be all it's cracked up to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's more important than seeing, you know, nearly headless Nick just keep coming in and out. Like, nobody cares. Nobody cares. They become messengers.
The only
Nobody
one that
cares.
Was, like, important was Rowena Ravenclaw, but that wasn't even until the end.
Yeah.
To try to find the diadem.
Yeah. In terms of favorite of the books, or you could go with movies, depending. Do you guys have like personal favorites? I think mine would be Order of the Phoenix, because I mean, certainly Goblet of Fire is pretty epic and awesome. That's when the story really opens up.
That's actually one of my least favorites.
Which one? Phoenix?
Goblet. There's something about Goblet of Fire that doesn't click with me.
I kind of see that.
But the thing is, all the aspects are there. You know, the greater wizarding world, mm-hmm. The different schools, like all of that I should love. I actually don't really care for that book. Really? But Azkaban and Half-Blood Prince are my two favorites.
I love Azkaban. The movies, I think that's one of my favorites.
Azkaban's one of the best movies.
But that's because mm-hmm. Cuarón directed it, and he's one of their better ones. But I mean, specifically books, though, the fifth one to me, The Order of the Phoenix, I got that right, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's when the world really opens up. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's the first one where Harry doesn't just have like his adventure with his family. What's the family called? His parents?
The Dursleys.
The Dursleys, yeah. He has a little bit of that. But then instead of going straight to the school, he has an adventure in the outer world. Yeah. And those were the moments, I think, when I really, really enjoyed the scope of the story. Because I'm like, okay, we've been in the Wizard, we've been in Hogwarts, we've sort of seen the Dursleys over and over again, they're evil people, all that stuff. But now we're getting to see what the rest of the people are doing, and I thought that was really neat. Hmm. What do you think, Laura? What's your favorite?
3 and 6.
Oh, that's right, you said that.
I just, Azkaban was the first one, because it's not that I dislike Chamber of Secrets, it's just, Chamber of Secrets is Chamber of Secrets.
It's just kind of there.
But you get to see that, like, not all is cracked up to be. You get some aspects of his parents. You know that he has, like, some sort of family that's out there. He gets the firebolt. You get to spend time in Diagon. And then, like, 6 for me, Half-Blood Prince is the housekeeping book.
Oh, yeah.
It's where, like, all of these things that we've been building to are there. Like, because when you look at it, like, 6 is the penultimate book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 7 is all climax, and then, like, you know,
denouement.
Yeah, but for me, like, 6 is where
See,
it's
See, to
at.
Me, like, 6 is the most forgettable.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember very much. I can remember the general plot of the book, but as far as any sort of specifics,
to me, it kind of jumps, like, Order of the Phoenix was the penultimate, and then... Because that's when you get, like, the prophecy starts getting talked about. And they actually go into the ministry. And
all the training in the Room of Requirement
I just, to me...
Yeah, you get all that. But the prophecy isn't something that we didn't know. Like, we all knew the prophecy. That doesn't surprise me. That's why I think, like, while I like Order of the Phoenix, it's not really... That, to me, is one of the forgettable books. Is that, you know... 1 through 4, for better or for worse, there are some parts that I like, some parts I didn't like. 5 for me is just, it's there. Like, I read it, it's like 800 pages, and it's just, but I knew this. Like, people died, it was sad. You know, either Harry lives or Voldemort lives. Like, bitch, I could have told you that from page 1.
Right?
Like, it's...
Now, what about you, Eric? What did you say?
I think 4 and 5 are probably my favorite books. I do agree that, I mean, 4 isn't a perfect book. I think, yes, it was nice to have the other schools brought in to build the world, mm-hmm. but I didn't think they necessarily added.
They didn't have a lot of personality, I don't think, the way they're depicted.
No.
Drumstrang.
Drumstrang?
Yeah.
Oh,
Seemed seemed like a school of Slytherin, you know? It was
just creeping into the ship.
Have you seen what Victor Crumb looks like now?
Yes.
Hot damn.
I have a thing for Eastern European.
Well,
like the whole former Soviet bloc.
Oh. You watch a lot of Bellamy porn?
No, I don't.
And Adam, what about you?
Mine is kind of what Eric said. Mine's Goblet of Fire, but not for much the story. I'm always one of those people that when I play a game or read a book or watch a movie, I'm more interested in the greater world as opposed to that singular thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that we learned about Beauxbatons and learned about Durmstrang.
Side quests.
I do. I like the side quests. And I thought it was interesting that it brought in, you know, it talked about Salem for a hot second when they were at
the Salem Institute.
When they are at the World Cup. I like that they talk about the Brazil school because Percy has that exchange student that he talks to down in the Brazilian school. I like that it talked about more than just London, more than just Northern Scotland.
They could have gone. They never really did touch on the United States at all, did they?
They do like Pottermore does.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. But I'm just like, I just think about itself, that. I'm like, it's very British.
And that's what Fantastic Beasts will end up.
Yeah,
being.
It's going to be in New York.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
It's 1940s New York City.
Ooh, that's a very nice era. I do like that. So wrapping things up, specifically, I guess, talking like things that are coming.
That's pretty much it. Fantastic Beasts at some point.
But let's play Armchair Quarterback. Could you see a comic book adaptation of this Harry Potter world, a TV miniseries or TV show like on HBO or something?
I honestly think that Harry Potter, the movies, are terrible.
Okay.
Honest to God, I think they're horrible. The only good one is Sorcerer's Stone. I think it would be much better if they almost did what they're doing with Game of Thrones. Made it a series. Like, HBO does very good series. I think it'd be great if they took Harry Potter and made it a series.
What about a Harry Potter manga or anime?
Oh God, no!
I don't think.
Oh God, with everyone having big saucer-like eyes.
Well, they could go for a different style.
That's what Potter Puppet Pals is. It's kind of like
what
Potter Puppet Pals.
Oh, that's the YouTube.
That's kind of like anime, but with puppets. But they have the big saucer eyes and ridiculous.
Is that like things. Where they go Snape? Snape. Severus. Oh,
there's even more better videos than just that one. I love Potter Puppet Pals.
I've got to go watch. I have only seen the one.
My favorite is Snape's Diary. They steal Snape's Diary and read it, and it has one of my favorite lines, and it's Ron goes, "I'm hungry," and Harry goes, "What else is new, fatty?"
Oh!
And that's my favorite line.
Wow. That's fantastic.
My kind of favorite piece of fan art, whatever, is a Harry Potter musical.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. It's just brilliant.
Also, I love that Draco just rolls around on the floor.
Yes. Every in that musical, Draco's my favorite character.
He's hysterical.
The girl who plays him is amazing, and just everything about it. Fantastic.
Does anyone else have any parting words about their love of the Harry Potter?
A customer made me a Ravenclaw hat, and I asked if the silver could sparkle, and it does.
Ooh, very nice.
Okay. That, as a Ravenclaw, I don't know about you, but it bothered me. If I could ask Joe one question, it would be, why in the films she let Ravenclaw's colors be blue and silver when it was blue and bronze?
Oh.
Why?
You know, the thing about it is that blue and bronze, I mean, no offense, it works, but it doesn't really
work. It's not
work.
Blue and silver, that's...
Blue and silver is a good combination, though. But as, like, I'm very much a... Sticking
book purist.
To, I'm a purist.
No, I totally agree with you, but like it's hard to rock like blue and bronze. Like it's just hard. Like it makes like
so you're lazy. That's what you're saying.
No, I'm not lazy.
You can't coordinate your clothes.
I think the
bitch.
I think the filmmakers definitely, from a visual point, blue and silver is more striking. On film.
But we already had silver. Choose a different color.
And bronze would have definitely kind of just faded into the darker backgrounds of the school.
It's hard to make bronze really work like that, I think. But I agree. If she said it, then why did they change it?
Granted, because she's made very few concessions.
Yeah. She has.
Yeah, so.
But, I mean, so what I'm hearing is color choices and other things aside, a new version of the stories might be a good thing.
I think
in a few years, not anything, you know.
Well, I know that Tom Felton has said that he'd love to come back and play Lucius Malfoy.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, and I could totally see them doing, like, you know, something down the line, but I'm too young for that. And I can't, I can't really go through that all again.
No.
Also, I will say this. If you haven't been to the new Potter Experience Diagon, the one thing that they did that completely altered my view of a line, because, you know, when you work at Universal, I refuse to. I stood in the line once. I waited 2 hours for Gringotts, but bitch, you better believe I rode it twice. So, having said that, having booze in the line, greatest thing ever.
Wait.
You what? Can, yeah,
they have
yeah.
carts.
They have carts, wow. And then you can take food on with you.
Uh huh.
As long as you finish it before you get there.
Yeah. Okay. Through Gringotts, and then like on the train, like. You stop in King's Cross. Like, King's Cross looks like King's Cross. Like, yeah. It looks like a tram station. And you buy booze and sandwiches
they
and
pita
chips.
They have a little shop in the queue line.
I drank all the way through.
And I actually of the train and Gringotts, I prefer the train, just riding the train. I think it's...
See, I was very disappointed by the train, honestly. And it's not because of the experience.
I mean, just not being able to walk up and down the train, you know.
That's not what bothered me. What bothered me was the fact that, and I was eventually going to say this, but it's that Emma and Dan and Rupert have tried to distance themselves so much from Potter that the voices on the train, Rupert's the only one who came back and did a voice recording for it.
Really?
Emma didn't do it, nor did Dan.
She's a very busy woman. Don't you see her talking to the U.S.? Bitch, step back.
The thing is that the excuse that Emma gave was that she was during finals week because she was at Brown, which mm-hmm. is understandable. At the same time, you could do a voice recording in a few hours.
That's a weak excuse, to be sure.
It is. And I'm just like, why are you? This is what made you. You wouldn't have this job at Disney being fucking Belle if it wasn't for Hermione fucking Granger. Like. Mm. Sorry about it, but it's not. Like, you need to go. And none of them have come to the park, have come to Diagon.
Yeah.
They came to opening of Hogsmeade. None of them have walked into the doors of Diagon Alley.
Well, you know what? It's, I can see why you would want to move away from that because, you know, being typecast is suicide if you want to pursue acting.
Yes, like, but at this point, there's been enough separation in time.
There will never be enough separation in time. You look at Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart has been on Broadway. Patrick Stewart has been in London's East End. Patrick Stewart is Sir Patrick Stewart. He will always be Jean-Luc Picard.
That's true.
And like he's moved into that now. But there was a time where he didn't touch any of that stuff. You know, when you need the money, you come back.
Yeah, but, you do conventions.
Like, yeah. I can understand them not wanting to live, breathe, and die this because, you know, you did it for X amount of years. This was your, you know, this was a big part of your life. You have awesome memories of it. Sometimes you really want to just, you know, probably pitch yourself off the astronomy tower. But, you know, like, you move on. And I think that's why I think that I'm a really good fan or part of any fandom. You take what you want, and then you leave it.
I mean, I agree, but at the same time, like, they did the recording for the Gringotts ride during the last movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see why... It bothered me that they couldn't take a day, 5 hours, to record a single piece of dialogue. It's not that difficult. I mean, Ivana Lynch still loves to come and play Luna. The twins still love to come and be the twins. It's just like, this is what made you, and I feel like her and Dan are both trying to really distance, and don't get me wrong, I understand it. It's just, as a fan, I'm disappointed. I expected more.
I mean, I totally understand that, but other than that, it sounds like it's a magical, wonderful experience, and I think everyone should come down here to Orlando and come see it.
Please don't bother me.
Oh, wow.
Just kidding. Just kidding. Or if you do, speak English. And if you come at me with Portuguese, I swear to God. Oh. I swear to God.
I apologize to all our Portuguese listeners out there. All five or two of you. I don't know. I think that's pretty much all the Harry Potter stuff. If you like us and you really want to hear more of us, you can go to flameonshow.com. Or Flame On Show on Facebook and SoundCloud. And we are going to be doing, for those of you who are Nerdy Show listeners, who are Patreon subscribers, we are going to be doing some content very soon that will be just for you.
Goody, goody.
Hopefully very exciting, possibly controversial. We'll see.
Love controversy.
I know, right? And Flame On Podcast is our Twitter handle.
Twitter.
Which occasionally we tweet at.
Twatter.
We do twat occasionally.
Twatter Potter.
And we are looking for good questions because we are always looking for how we can help the world on our little relationship and whatever advice column that we do.
I give really good advice.
I know you do. I'm looking right at you, am I not? Mm-hmm. But thank you for listening. We will be back in 2 short weeks. So until then, flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of tops and bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.